This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, U.S. President Donald Trump recognizes Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. Why and why now? Hello again. I'm Carol Castiel. President Donald Trump this month reversed decades of U.S. policy and recognized Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, potentially imperiling Middle East peace efforts and upsetting the Arab world and Western allies alike. Mr. Trump announced his administration would begin a process of moving the U.S. embassy in Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, a step expected to take years and one that his predecessors opted not to take to avoid inflaming tensions. The status of Jerusalem, home to sites holy to the Muslim, Jewish, and Christian religions, is one of the biggest obstacles to reaching a peace agreement between Israel and the Palestinians. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu hailed Trump's announcement as a historic landmark, but other close Western allies of Washington, such as Britain and France, were critical. Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas said the United States has abdicated its role as mediator in peace efforts, and Palestinian secular and Islamist factions unanimously condemned the decision. Christians across the Middle East are equally incensed by the decision on Jerusalem. Even the public Christmas lighting in Beit Sahur in the Israeli-occupied West Bank was devoid of its usual festive cheer. The international community does not recognize Israeli sovereignty over the entire city, believing its status should be resolved in negotiations. Mr. Trump's decision fulfills a campaign promise and pleases Republican conservatives and evangelicals who make up a sizable portion of his domestic support. For more on the controversial decision and its wider implications, we talk with two regional experts. Dan Revive is formerly with CBS Radio, currently is Washington correspondent for I-24 News, an Israeli-based cable news channel. And Reith Al-Omari, he's senior fellow at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy. Previously, he served in various advisory positions with the Palestinian Authority, including advisor to the negotiating team during the 1999-2001 permanent status talks. Both gentlemen join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Carol.
Well, Dan Revive, let me begin with you and let me remind our listeners that you are one of our valued panelists on issues in the news. What's your take on President Trump's unilateral decision to recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital, a move, as you know, has pleased the Israeli government, but really has upset many of our Arab friends and Europeans as well?
Donald Trump prides himself on being a disruptor. He proudly says he's not going to stick with policies of the past, especially if they didn't work. Now, no one's going to claim that Trump is an expert on world affairs, on the Middle East. He doesn't read books. He doesn't read really thick advisory reports. This is according to people who work in the White House. But he listens to a lot of people. He talks to people, and some people make sense to him. And obviously, some folks had told him, you know, one of the strange things in the Middle East is that the United States has never recognized any place as the capital of Israel. When U.S. diplomats go to Israel, sir, Mr. President, when you went to Israel in May of this year, where did you go in Israel? You went to Jerusalem. That's where you saw the Prime Minister of Israel, the President. You know the Supreme Court of Israel is there. You're aware, Mr. President, that Jerusalem is the capital, yet our embassy is in Tel Aviv. Does that make sense? Apparently, President Trump says it makes no sense at all. I want to correct that. And I want to correct that before they start talking and negotiating. Now, that's really the big change. It used to be that Jerusalem, as the most difficult issue, was being left as the last issue when there were Palestinian-Israeli talks. Trump's view is different. He says, no, I'm going to settle our attitude beforehand. Now, mind you, he didn't say the entire city of Jerusalem should be Israeli. He didn't rule out that there could be a Palestinian independent state with East Jerusalem as its capital. That's the demand being made by Palestinians and this past week by the Organization of Islamic Countries. And Trump would tell you right now, if he were sitting here in the VOA studios, I didn't rule that out. I was just recognizing reality, nothing more, nothing less. That's what he said in his speech, Carol.
Reith Al-Omari, he didn't rule that out, but that part of his speech was not amplified. The part of his speech and the decision was that the capital of Israel would be Jerusalem and would be officially recognized as such. And that is what has caused the uproar.
Absolutely. Look, for all of us, you know, lawyers, diplomats, experts, we can look at the words, and as Dan mentioned, and as you mentioned, there is nothing to preclude East Jerusalem as a capital of a Palestinian state. But for your average Palestinian sitting in a cafe in Ramallah or Gaza, they don't look at this nuance. They look at the headlines. Add to that, there are actors who have an interest in only amplifying the negative. We saw this from Muslim Brotherhood-oriented media. We saw it from Hamas-oriented media, Iranian media, Qatari media. So because of the symbolic importance of Jerusalem to Arabs and to Muslims, it was only expected, only natural that people will focus on the negative. And the finesse and the diplomatic and the diplo-speak simply just doesn't translate to a public.
Back to you, Dan Raviv. Do you think that domestic factors, Mr. Trump's evangelical base, we know they're very strongly supportive of this particular decision. To what extent did that factor perhaps override or outweigh other voices saying, you know, this isn't the right time, Mr. Trump, to make such a decision?
There's no question about it. Donald Trump really wants to win re-election in the year 2020. He wants to firm up his base of voters, those included in many states, evangelical Christians, who are very pro-Israel. And interestingly, they don't mind the notion that Jerusalem would be capital of the Jewish state of Israel. Right? Muslims seem to find that to be a great insult. Palestinians think it's a humiliation for them, and obviously an anti-Palestinian, anti-Arab, anti-Muslim move. But again, the White House would say, no, we've got Christian support. Jews in America seem to like it. By the way, just to be informative again to our listeners, liberal voters who don't like Trump, including Jewish voters in the U.S., many of them didn't like this because they said, why do it now? You're only inflaming passions. Why do it? So Trump, I think, was sort of weaving his way, made his own decision, and made a speech that he thinks was the right thing to do. Again, I can't defend the timing. I don't think it was necessary at this time, but I feel I can explain it, and the White House at least thinks there's no harm. The Middle East will get over it in the next month or two. Will they?
Well, that's a good question for Raith to answer. So, Raith, can you answer that? And to what extent do you think that domestic politics, the fact that Mr. Trump has a very strong evangelical base, they were pushing for this decision day in and day out, to what extent do you think they perhaps trumped, no pun intended, cooler foreign policy heads?
But first of all, let's be clear. All politics is local, and for every president, domestic considerations are a consideration. Though in this particular case, my sense, it was less in response to a push from the base, more of a personal decision by President Trump to continue building a certain image of himself. If you look at the speech itself, the beginning, he emphasized how he is different from every previous president. The second part of the speech, he focused on how he, as Dan said, does things differently and is a disruptor. The third part talked about how he's always true to his campaign promises. So much of it is President Trump re-emphasizing a certain persona that he likes to project. Will it pass in the Middle East? Very hard to tell. The first reaction has been muted, but these things have a way of developing. It's really difficult to tell what's going to happen on the ground.
Do you think it's important to note, however, that in the Middle East, it was always assumed that the United States is Israel's friend? So when U.S. mediators, like the former Secretary of State John Kerry, claim to be even-handed and facilitating talks between Israelis and Palestinians, most Arabs in the Middle East, they felt they were seeing through that.
Certainly, but the narrative of some degree of, if not balance, then a degree of taking everyone's interest into account was one that has allowed Arab leaders to continue to engage with the United States, whether in the peace process or on other issues. Such a clear statement has made it difficult politically for Palestinian leaders to engage in an American-led peace process in the short term, and for Arab leaders to continue engaging in a proactive, robust way in the relation with the United States. We saw traditional Arab allies like Jordan, like Saudi, like Egypt, feeling that they are forced to take a very negative position. I think for most of them, they will wait for the public interest to die down because the U.S.-Arab relations are too important to sacrifice over something like this. But in the short term, it has made it difficult for them and it has enabled their critics to actually put them on the defensive. Again, you look at Iranian media, you look at Qatari media, it's all focusing on how the Saudis, the Egyptians sold out the Palestinians. So it's an additional vulnerability at a time where they did not need this vulnerability.
And what about the Palestinians themselves? Haven't they made a mistake by cutting off their connections, their contacts with the United States? That's only going to hurt the Palestinians.
I would argue that politically speaking, for any Palestinian leader right now, given the degree of anger that you see on the street, it would be political suicide to be seen as engaging with the United States. I have no doubt that deep in their hearts and their minds, Palestinian leaders understand there is no substitute to the United States. Yet, for the time being, they have to put it on hold and start looking in the future of ways of climbing down this tree that they had no choice, in my view, but to climb.
That leads me to the next question. So back to you, Dan Raviv. And that is what I call the Iran angle. Again, this speaks to the timing of this decision, notwithstanding any merits it may have. And that is, what about the notion that this particular decision, which critics argue could have perhaps been reached in a more gradual way down the line through negotiations, is actually a gift to Iran, whom the United States wants to isolate and weaken in the region, as well as many of its Sunni Arab allies, that now this particular decision to recognize Jerusalem as capital of Israel makes it harder to hold together what was seen as a burgeoning alliance among Israeli, even Turkish, and Sunni Arab Gulf states against Iran.
The thought that Saudi Arabia now has to turn away, at least in public, from any ties with Israel or the sense of shared interest. But again, this wasn't a move by Israel. It was by President Trump for reasons that included domestic politics, his view of reality. He thinks that this would be useful. So one wonders whether the world should blame Israel. Just again, a subtlety here. The government of Prime Minister Netanyahu did not press for this. They saw it as a gift. They agree with it, but they didn't press for it. Now, briefly about Iran, there are many ways to see Iranian gains in the Middle East recently. Even the outcome of the Syrian civil war may turn out to work well for Iran. Iran's allies are gaining more strength in Lebanon, certainly in Iraq. And is the U.S. doing enough against that? Maybe not. But Trump says, if I stand firmly with Israel, that's going to send a clear message. And he thinks that will help block Iran. He may be wrong, but that's the way he sees it.
Exactly. He sees it might help block Iran. But other observers, Raith, see that this particular decision, no matter how well-intentioned by President Trump, is actually a gift to Iran. It supports, it bolsters their position in the region, makes it harder for that burgeoning alliance behind the scenes between Israelis and Saudis and other Gulf Arab states. It weakens that alliance. It frays it.
Look, at a fundamental level, that alliance is not going to be scrapped simply because Arabs understand that the U.S. is the only international actor who can actually come and lead in the region. And actually what we've seen since the election of Trump is the Arab world, at least the traditional pro-American Arab leaders, have been excited in terms of rebuilding the relation with the United States after what they saw of as 8 negative years under Obama. What this decision does, though, in the immediate term, it gives the Iranians the opportunity to say that all of those who bet on the United States are making the wrong bet. They get an opportunity to depict all of the Arab leaders who engage the United States as traitors. And we've seen this in Iranian statements, in Iranian media. The challenge now this is done and this is a reality, is there a way for the U.S. to re-engage and present the Arabs with something that will counter this move so that the Arabs can come and say, okay, Trump gave this to Israel, but we got this out of it. So here we have an opportunity, maybe in foreign policy terms.
Gaith, is it possible that another angle to consider is that Donald Trump's view is that he wanted to send the Arabs, including Palestinians, a message: time is not on your side. The U.S. will keep being pro-Israel, delivering weapons to Israel, military aid, taking Israel's side, because many Arabs have assumed that time is on their side in this conflict.
Look, in this way, I just do not see President Trump as different from any other president. Every president has reaffirmed his commitment to Israel. This is not a variable. This is something that every Arab leader understands and has accepted. So I don't see this as a major part of it. I see it primarily as a domestic issue.
You're listening to Encounter on The Voice of America. My guests are Dan Raviv, formerly veteran reporter with CBS Radio, currently Washington correspondent for I-24 News, an Israeli-based cable news channel, and Raith Al-Omari. He's senior fellow at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy. We're discussing the rationale for and ramifications of the Trump White House decision to break with decades of tradition and recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us on Facebook. Here's a shout out to loyal listener Akim Adeleke, from the city of Osogbo in southwestern Nigeria. If you want to hear your name on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to you, Dan Raviv, to continue our discussion about the decision to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel by President Donald Trump. And talk about the way he did this. Many critics say that, okay, you can do this, but why do it without conditions? Why do it without extracting perhaps a concession simultaneously from Israelis, perhaps stop settlement building and so forth? How do you see that?
I've heard a lot of pundits writing in newspapers, magazines, and websites who've said that that's what Trump should have done, demanding some concession from the Israeli government. But I thought to myself that Trump, especially how he positions himself when it comes to Israel, he just wants to be a supporter. He does not see Israel as a problem. He doesn't see Israel as a foe. He doesn't want to be seen as twisting Israel's arm. And so the way the American president would see it, why should I demand anything? I'm only recognizing reality. Of course, he knows he was giving the Israelis a gift and being nice to Israel. But again, I feel he was trying to send the Arabs a message. I am friendly with Israel. What are you going to make of it? Let's start peace negotiations anyway. So that's what I think was his thinking.
Reif Alomari, to what extent do you think, had President Trump tried to extract some concessions from Israelis at the same time he made this decision? He's going to make this decision, but at the same time, on the condition that you, Israelis, stop settlement building, etc., could that have mollified the reaction by the Arab world?
Look, I think an American president can send a very clear message that he is pro-Israel, while at the same time sending a message to the Arabs that he is supportive of them. President Clinton was a master of this. He was equally popular among Israelis and among Arabs. So I think it does not have to be a zero-sum approach. I personally believe that as someone who prides himself as being the ultimate deal maker, he has wasted an opportunity to do this in the context of a negotiation, in a wider package. He would have used this, first of all, to leverage vis-a-vis Israel, but also would have made it easier for many Arabs to accept it if it was seen as one part of a package that would have, in other parts of it, included aspects that are good for them. Right now, what we have seen is the Arabs almost feeling forced to take a negative stance, even though many of them did not want to take a negative stance, but they saw themselves as cornered with no other political option.
Dan Raviv, you certainly have your finger on the pulse of the Israeli public. I'd like to get your view of what Israelis are thinking, not the settlers or some of the Orthodox who are probably cheering this decision. Is there a nuance among the Israeli public vis-a-vis this decision?
I feel that many Israelis, frankly, don't care about this. Even the notion that the United States might have twisted Israel's arm and extracted some concession in exchange for recognizing Jerusalem as Israel's capital, in exchange for the U.S. eventually planning to move that embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, the Israeli government probably would have said, no thanks, no deal, no, we're not going to make any concessions on settlements or our hold on the West Bank. So President Trump, if you like this idea of doing it, go right ahead and do it. But no, the Israelis wouldn't have given in. Now, as for most Israelis, they also feel, we know our capital is Jerusalem. We know all the embassies are in Tel Aviv. If we have to apply for visas, that's where we go and queue up. And they're not offended by that.
Okay, but really quickly, a follow-up. Do some Israelis, the pro-peace faction, do they see this as potentially detrimental to peace talks?
Yes, we saw it in editorials in the Israeli press. Writers who cast themselves as liberals, they really want the peace process to restart. They don't want Israel to keep holding the West Bank. They want settlements to be rolled back and evacuated. That is, if you will, left-wing Israelis, absolutely. Their view is what Trump did is terrible. It encourages the Netanyahu government and his right-wing ministers. It encourages settlers. Therefore, it sends a bad message. That's what the, if you will, liberal or left-wing in Israel is saying. Let's be honest. Let's look at the recent elections in Israel. The right wing has been winning in recent decades. So most Israelis, they like Trump. They think he's better than Barack Obama from their point of view.
And Reif Alomari, what's the view, in a sense, from the Palestinians, in addition to what you've already said? You know, what impact is this having on Mahmoud Abbas? And what about other voices among the Palestinians?
I mean, Abbas is certainly weakened. There was a poll published very recently after the decision was made, which saw 80% of the Palestinians asking for Abbas to resign. This is due to many factors, corruption, poor governance, etc., but also due to the fact that he was seen as too close to the administration. Hamas feels emboldened now. The rhetoric is heightened. Abbas and Hamas are in a reconciliation process right now, and this has added to the leverage that Hamas has in this reconciliation process. Again, for the time being, what it did is it strengthened and empowered the more hardline positions among Palestinians. Will it lead to violence? So far, it hasn't. Again, it's not irreversible. I believe if there is an American peace deal that is seen by Palestinians as reasonable, one can overcome this. But for the time being, everyone is locked in their position.
Well, speaking of peace deal, back to you, Dan Raviv. President Trump has touted the fact that, you know, he can make the deal, the ultimate deal in the Middle East. And others are saying now that this particular decision might even undermine that. To what extent do you think this decision on Jerusalem will have an impact on the Trump administration's ability to broker a peace deal in the Middle East?
Carol, it's difficult to know what is brewing in the White House. The president has his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and a team working on a peace plan that would include not just Israelis and Palestinians, but would suggest a role for Saudi Arabia and other Gulf Arab countries in investing in peace and being in favor of it, trying to put pressure on Palestinians to say, this is the time to make the deal before the deal gets worse for you. Therefore, I don't know whether Trump's announcement fits into that. It might. By making a pro-Israeli move on Jerusalem, he's telling the Arabs, now's the time to embrace what I'm going to offer within a few months. It'll be fascinating. I do think the Trump White House will try to offer something publicly, probably by February.
And do you think that that might include this distinction between West and East Jerusalem?
It certainly might. If it speaks of the possibility and even favorably of two states, Israel, mostly Jewish, Palestine, an Arab state, but respects both of them and might even suggest that East Jerusalem could be Palestine's capital, while West Jerusalem would continue to be Israel's capital, that could be seen as reasonable.
What do you think about that, Reith Alomari, the impact of this decision on jumpstarting peace talks, which President Trump has also said he wants to do very soon?
From a substantive perspective, this has not prejudiced any of the issues. As we said earlier, Jerusalem can still, under the president's formulation, be divided. The challenge is political. The challenge is when it's time to put this plan forward in a few months, would the Palestinian leaders feel strong enough to engage, or will they have been held hostage by the more extreme voices amongst them? We don't know. Would the Arab leaders, Saudi, Jordan, etc., Egypt, feel that they have the political ability to engage or not? It remains to be seen. This is very much dependent on how things develop on the ground, and it's very hard to predict this right now. One point, though, we mentioned Iran. I think for many Arab leaders, not for the Palestinians, for Arab leaders, if they see a clear, robust American policy vis-a-vis Iran to push against Iran's regional disruption, I think they'll be much more inclined to engage positively.
Well, as we close, back to you, Dan Raviv. Vice President Mike Pence is on his way to the region. Do you think he might face a backlash? Many Christians, you know, are very opposed to this decision. How do you think he'll be received?
Vice President Pence is likely to have a rough visit with a tough reception, with Arab leaders demanding, if they're even willing to see him, demanding an explanation. Why did Trump do this? And he'll say that, come on, everybody, this is the Middle East. We needed a change. We need the disruption. We need to move toward peace for everyone's sake. And if he's smart, he'll even make the point that we can get together and oppose Iran's ambitions. Let's focus on that. That could appeal to many Arabs.
What do you think, Reith? You have the last word.
The problem with Vice President Pence is not the diplomatic side. He will make all these statements. The problem is this is a trip that was billed to a large extent as one that highlights Middle Eastern Christians. Well, so far, the Coptic Pope in Egypt has refused to see him. So far, religious leaders in Jerusalem and Bethlehem, Christian leaders, have refused to see him. So what would have been for him a trip that highlighted the Christian aspect right now will have to end up being simply a diplomatic trip that will be highly immemorable in many ways.
I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guest, Reith Alomari. He's senior fellow at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy, and Dan Raviv, Washington correspondent for I-24 News. Gentlemen, thanks so much for your terrific insights and analysis.
Thank you, Carol.
Encounter was produced in Washington. Our engineer was Cornelius Tenner. Thanks to Rebecca Ward for booking our guests. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America.